This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. Hey, good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. We made it to the first Friday of 2025.
Hey, you know, I'm kind of excited, man. A couple days off, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, yesterday felt weird. It almost felt like Monday, but it's Friday and we got 2 days off.
Yeah.
Well, we're all in a time warp. I mean, it's like 2025, right? This is the future. Back to the future.
So if you don't know by now who that guy is, that's my co-host Sandy Williams. Hey, good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing, my friend?
Well, I'm doing all right. I think pretty soon, like I said, we can stop saying the 20 before 25, right? We can talk about, because they always talk about the crash of 29. They didn't talk about 1929. So I think we're almost there. We're well into this next century. We have to accept it.
Yeah, but you know, Sandy, the younger people who are listening, those guys in their 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s.
Yeah. It's funny how old younger can get.
Yeah. And so those guys, you know, may not see the 25 and leaving the 20 out, but you and I understand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, to be honest with you, it's like the shorthand in texting. We just all have to get used to efficiency here.
Yeah, you know, Sandy, I didn't. Happy New Year to you, by the way.
And Happy New Year to you. Did you celebrate until 4 a.m?
I did what I do, and have done for the last 30 years on New Year's. I watched the Twilight Zones. New Year's, they play it from 7 o'clock a.m. to about 9 o'clock the next morning. I didn't watch all of those things, but certainly watched it until I fell asleep.
Wow, get a life, Earl. That's something, you know. You could have watched Humphrey Bogart movies for that same time, I suppose.
Well, I watch Humphrey Bogart movies all the time, so I,
yeah,
you know, and I'll tell you something. I fell asleep before New Year's, but then the war zone took off with all the gunfire. Pow, pow. Sandy, what is that? Why do people do that?
What are you talking about?
Shooting, do people shoot? Yes.
Shooting guns off?
Yes.
Ah.
Well, you can't hear it. You live in, you know.
I live in more isolation, I guess. Yeah. But happily, I don't live someplace. You know, what I've always thought about these people shooting guns off, shooting them up in the air, is those bullets come down.
Yes.
What? Why do we never read about the descending bullet problem? Because, you know, particularly in the Mideast, there are places where when people celebrate, they just take their guns out and shoot them up in the air like mad.
Well, that's exactly what takes place, you know, for those of us who live in the city, certain places in the city. And it's not just, you know, pop guns. It's like, man, pow, pow. I mean, just heavy, heavy artillery.
Well, I think you want to be undercover. Because, you know, what goes up, you know, Isaac Newton.
Yeah, it must
he
come
taught
down.
Us that lesson, yeah.
Well, you know, Sandy, a lot to talk about this morning, as always. But I want to begin with the Surgeon General, Sandy. You know, we went through the thing with cigarettes, right? And so many millions of Americans died because of tobacco causing cancer. And they encourage, we encourage people to smoke cigarettes. I mean, for heaven's sakes, the old movies I watch, they're firing them up, Sandy, one after another. Even in the cowboy days, everybody's firing up cigarettes. They're offering cigarettes and cigarettes in the movies and all those things. You couldn't do or say or see anything that didn't show the joys of smoking cigarettes. Did you ever smoke?
No, I mean, I think in college I did it periodically to look cool.
Yeah,
it definitely looked cool. But that's because everyone in the movies did it.
Yes.
No, I never was a habitué. I used to sneak and do it a little bit, but no.
So, you know, I smoked for about, 4 or 5 years, but I was never a heavy smoker. You never knew the odor that comes around you when you smoke, right? There's the other people who notice that.
I remember as a kid, my aunt smoked, and I used to like the smell. I mean, smoking had a mystique to it, but when you think about it, what a strange deal, you know, suck a bunch of smoke in and then blow it out in kind of a ceremonious fashion. That was it's a bit of a weird habit. But,
well, and it certainly affected your taste.
Yeah.
You know, when you... But anyway, you know.
Now they're going after alcohol, and think everyone has always known that there were plenty of downsides to alcohol. Some of them being health, right? I mean, you drink too much, you ruin your liver. You drink very much, and it causes a variety of problems. There was, however, up until. Like just a couple of years ago, there was for about 25 years, some medical authorities who were suggesting that it was good to drink a glass of wine a day, which sounds like a theory proposed by the wine industry and then subsequently adopted by doctors. But now the suggestion is the Surgeon General is going to put a warning on alcohol, which... is probably worthy, but I think everyone who currently drinks realizes that they're assuming some risks in the process.
Yeah, but Sandy, I don't think they knew about cancer and the connection to cancers and alcohol. Now they're asking to put the same kind of label on alcohol that they have on cigarettes. That's a big deal.
Well, I think everyone has understood pancreatic cancer. I think everyone has understood, even breast cancer was getting some discussion for the last 20 years or so, that women who drank regularly had a higher probability of getting breast cancer. I mean, I think it's very good that we put indicators on products suggesting what the risks of use are. Simply suggesting that I suspect that many people will assume the risk.
I don't know, Sandy. We saw what happened with cigarettes. Once people found out, people certainly cut back on smoking cigarettes. Right? I mean, tremendously. Once they've heard about the correlation between cancer and cigarettes.
Well, let me just suggest that when alcohol was against the law, and you could actually be imprisoned for being involved, it didn't stop many people. And so I don't know. I wish that alcohol wasn't as central to our society, and it isn't even as central to American society as it is to some societies in other countries. But I think it'll take a very long time for at least social drinking to be eliminated. Because of perceived health hazards.
Well, you know, Sandy, I don't even know if it's so much eliminating social drinking as it may be cutting back. And this is the Health and Human Services. This is not some fly-by-night
organization. No, what they are finding for sure is that binge drinking, or what they call now intense drinking, which is binge drinking, I think, qualified at like the 5 drinks in an evening, and intense drinking is even well in excess of that. And those things are very bad for your health. And I would hope that people would understand that, but I can't believe they didn't perceive that at the time. I mean, you know, the fact that you throw up with, you know, that in, as a youth in the learning process is probably a clear indicator that you're drinking poison.
So the risk of developing, at least this is the HHS, Health and Human Services of the United of the government, consuming alcohol increases the risk of developing at least seven types of cancer: mouth, oral cavity, throat, voice box, esophagus, breast in women, liver, colon, and rectum. Four ways alcohol can cause cancer. Alcohol breaks down into, I don't know how to pronounce their name, which damages DNA in multiple ways, causing an increased risk of cancer. Alcohol induces oxidative stress, increases the risk of cancer by damaging DNA proteins and cells and increasing inflammation. Alcohol.
Stop, Earl. You're frightening me.
Well, Sandy, yes, you know, the question becomes, they're going to put this labeling on alcohol. And you know that didn't come very easily. I'm sure there was a major fight that has gone on for a long time with the alcohol industry pushing back against them being able to put these labels on alcohol.
Well, we'll see. You know, I suspect the alcohol industry is confident of their grip on humanity. And I do think it, however, is very wise to have admonitions associated with it, because alcohol, not only a drug that can cause cancer, but it can ruin your life, right? So, I mean, right. People ought to be careful about it.
Yeah, that's all. That's all we're doing, Sandy, is, you know, I'm a guy who from time to time, and I mean really long times in between, you know, may have a taste, but it clearly is something that I think our nation should be doing. It should be doing that for food. It should be doing that for all the things that impact and affect the lives of the American people. Just make us aware.
Well, there is this, though. California passed that proposition quite a while ago that required labeling of everything that could possibly cause cancer. And you get pretty numb to it, because if you're in California, almost everything you pick up has the proposition label on it telling you that it could cause cancer. So, you know, I think we have to understand that you can get numb to these labels as well.
All right. 855-752-4842. 10 budget cut policies, Sandy. Where Republicans want their tax cut, and that's the first thing they want to work on. But your thoughts on the 10 different budget cuts that they propose to offset their tax breaks. 855-752-4842. It's Friday. I mean, Friday's my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hey, that's what I hear at the basketball games. I mean,
I know this is basketball and football music, mainly football music. It's football all day, all the time. Actually, there have been some great football games on.
Yeah, there really
is. I decided that, and it's unbelievable. I mean, somehow they did a good job of picking teams, or maybe the rules of football have evened things out. But I'll tell you that. I watched a game a couple of days ago, the overtime.
Oh, man, the Texas against Arizona State?
Arizona State, yeah. That was an incredible football game.
It was one of the greatest football games I have ever seen. I said that the other day. That includes pros and everything. It had everything, didn't it? I mean, it was compelling. It was great football.
Yeah, and this kid Cam Scatabaugh made a name for himself. It's a pretty hard name to say, and I can say it.
You know what Scatabaugh? He reminded me of a guy that the Kansas City Chiefs used to have back in the '60s. Little short running back, bowling ball kind of guy. I'm forgetting his name, but the Scatabaugh guy was just an unbelievable all-around talent.
He caught a 60-plus yard touchdown, threw a 42-yard touchdown, and ran for 140-plus yards. I mean, the kid was pretty special, and I'm sure he's up the ante in terms of what his draft posture is going to be. He's going to be a pro that will play regularly on Sunday.
Oh, well, he looks like a guy who's about 5'10", 240.
Well, actually, I looked him up. He's 5'11 and 215, but he lost 25 pounds. He used to be 240, and he lost 25 this year to play faster.
Yeah, so he is 5'11". So I know he's a little short guy. But anyway, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842.
5'11 short, Earl, really? Well, where does that put
you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not playing pro football.
That's true.
And running back, you know. But anyway, you know, it's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, you and I have talked about this, and we know that the Republicans are going after extending those tax cuts for the wealthy. And it's almost like the number one thing on the plate.
Well, they're going after more than extending the tax cuts on the wealthy. They're Donald Trump and the campaign, and I think the Republicans are talking about a new increased tax reduction as well. So it's not just extending the tax cut. it's increasing the tax reductions for corporate taxes and for individuals.
So, Sandy, okay. You already know, what are we, $36 trillion in debt or whatever, growing?
The total debt's $36 trillion, but the annual deficit is at
over a trillion plus
rate. And so, you know, if we have a tax reduction on top of this, we're going to have increased deficits and an increasing debt. And however, you know, even if they match the tax revenue reduction caused by a new tax reduction, we're still going to be operating at a deficit. We have $1 trillion right now to make up for if we're going to get out of a deficit, annual deficit situation.
So where does truth and fiction separate itself, Sandy? Because I remember reading things that said, well, the deficit really is not that big a deal.
Well, the deficit is the only people who say that, and most economists say that, but it has to do with a relationship between national GDP and the annual deficit and gross domestic product and the size of the debt. And so what's happening is that relationship is depreciating. It's getting worse. So that currently our national debt exceeds our national annual gross domestic product. That's an unusual circumstance. Typically, in the past, our national debt has been less than our gross domestic product. Secondly, the size of our annual deficit is an increasing proportion of our gross domestic product, meaning the value of everything we do each year. And so both of those indicate that our debt is getting possibly too sizable for us to service comfortably. And then everyone understands that annual debt service, which goes up when interest rates go up, is becoming now it's a larger budget item than our god-awfully large annual military budget. So, you know, we're beginning to see that our national debt and our annual deficit is a problem that we need to address.
So what does it matter to the average American? I know, Sandy, back in about 1995 or so, we had a $1 trillion deficit, and they were talking as if...
A $1 trillion national debt.
Their national debt. And they were talking as if it was unconscionable for us to have that kind of debt. And we're just talking 1995. I remember that.
Well, in fact, beginning in 95, during the Clinton administration, we began to run budget surpluses. And the rate at which we were running budget surpluses was going to erase the national debt in the space of a decade. And then George Bush II came along, and the Republican Congress enacted a massive tax reduction, and then we became involved and mired in two very expensive $1 trillion-plus wars, which created immediately massive deficit, annual deficits, and an increasing national debt. And ever since then, we've failed to exercise very much fiscal discipline. You know, so we've gotten our cake and we've eaten it too. But as far as the average Joe is concerned, our national debt becoming too large will become a problem when it becomes an inflationary drag on the economy or a deflationary drag on the economy. And you know, in Greece, the people there found out how troublesome it could be to have too much debt on the national books.
So, Sandy, I want to dig a little deeper into that because, you know, we keep hearing about it. Yet nothing's being done to rectify it. And we, the American people, we're not calling the shots on that. So, you know, I want you to, you know, explain a little bit more to us. 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
All right, and welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. So Sandy, we were talking about the impact of the deficit. And our national debt. And as our nation continues to prosper economically, you know, the American people, I keep hearing that the more we get into this debt, I don't know if it's true or not, you've been in government, the deeper we get in this debt, the more of a problem it's going to be. For the average person, this debt, because let's say if in your own home, you can't carry debt, you know, very long before it destroys.
Well, I mean, in the, that's the way the national debt is looked at. It's looked at like a mortgage on a house. You're perfectly capable of carrying a moderate mortgage on your house, something that consumes no more than 15 to 20% of your annual disposable income to service. And so that's kind of the way the national debt is looked at as well. We're perfectly capable of sustaining an overriding debt that is a relatively small percentage of our income. national income when measured by GDP. But when it gets too big, it gets hard to sustain. And so if you can just look at it in terms of the size of the, if you consider debt service as a program, debt service has become the biggest program in the federal government right now because the debt service exceeds the program of the federal defense budget. So that means that it could well displace the ability to have programs that cost money that are for the benefit of the average American citizen. So that's part of the way the burden is sustained. But if it gets too large, then it actually has a very negative effect on the economy at large. And it has an effect on jobs, the number of jobs, the situation in the general economy. So, yeah, we got to be responsible. But the direction that Washington has taken at, under the leadership of the Republican Party most commonly is to reduce revenues and then to talk about reducing costs and reducing programs. But, of course, most of those programs are not easy to reduce because they're actually important to the American people. And that's what troubles me about the incoming Trump administration is they're talking about reducing taxes first and then looking at reducing programs to offset the revenue reduction from the tax reduction, which, of course, is putting the cart before the horse. And what we need to do fiscally is put the horse in front of the cart. We need to talk about the reductions in programs before we start reducing revenues instead of the other way around. And the Republicans find it convenient to reduce taxes first because all of the resistance to tax reductions comes from the discussion about what programs you're going to eliminate to offset the tax reduction. So what do? We reduce taxes and we carry out wars. We reduce taxes. And we continue to live, all of our programs continue to thrive. We reduce taxes, but we continue to give corporations bigger tax deductions for things like capital expenditures. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to sell everyone a chicken in every pot if you don't charge a price.
So, Sandy, when you wrap all of this together, the fact that the middle class has been harping about their situation and where they are in this nation and that they've been forgotten. And then people can point fingers and say, well, the Democrats didn't do what they should have done to address the pains of the middle class. Is it safe to say, Sandy, that it's not about Democrats, that it's about the fact that we have, what, the budget is what, $5 trillion or $4 trillion, whatever it is, and built into that less and less revenue coming in. No way you can change that if you're going to continue to cut back the revenue that comes
well,
in.
Well, I mean, the fact is, right? Yeah, I mean, middle class America is not crying out for tax reductions. They aren't saying that taxes are what's ruining their lives. What's ruining their lives are the other part of their budgets. It's the cost of health care. It's the cost of child daycare. It's the cost of education. It's the cost of planning for retirements. And so the people who want tax reductions are the people who earn lots of money and pay lots of taxes as the result. Instead of being happy that they earn lots of money, they decide to concentrate on being unhappy that they pay lots of taxes. You know, it's the glasses half full, but it's pretty hard to feel sympathetic for the top 1% of our country who are earning substantial amounts of money, whose assets are growing at an astronomic rate. And for them to cry out that they need to have reductions in taxes sort of begs credulity. And it also runs in the face of solving the problems for middle-class America, because what's happening is those tax reductions will increase deficits. The increased deficits will put increased pressure on reducing programs, making it less likely that the federal government can initiate programs to solve for high housing costs, to solve for high health costs, to do all the programmatic things that the average American needs.
So the talk is, again, The Republicans and Donald Trump want to impose new tariffs. They say it's going to bring in $2.7 trillion.
Well, that's what they say when they're trying to justify a tax reduction. But on the other side, out of the other side of their mouth, they all champion Donald Trump as saying, hey, this, all this talk about tariffs is a magnificent negotiating strategy. And what he's really going to do is use the threat of tariffs to cause other countries to knuckle under and do the things that then will not require that the tariffs be implemented. Because everyone knows that the broad implementation of tariffs, if we over 10 years, if we get $2.6 trillion of revenue out of tariffs, that'll mean that the American public is paying an additional $2.6 trillion because the public, it's the American public that pays these tariffs. And it means that all of the prices in the country will have gone up by an amplitude far greater than $2.6 trillion. And the ramifications of those broad tariffs are not good for the average American.
You know, Sandy, I'm not a guy that knows anything about calculus and any of those things, but I do know how to add and subtract. So if the Republicans are talking about these tax cuts, and they don't bring in this projected $2.7 trillion, they're adding additional burdens long-term to the national debt. Now, they talk about areas that they can look at to kind of wean or cut, and they're talking about clean energy programs, $700 billion. I mean, they've identified programs, Sandy, that they – say they can offset these.
Well, here's my proposal then. If they have a bunch of program reductions that they think they can implement, do it first. Put the horse in front of the cart, go to Congress and argue about the reduction in all these programs that they're talking about and see if they can get them passed. Because what they're trying to do is increase the leverage to get them passed by taking the revenue out of the system and then saying we're short money and now we've got to cut these programs. Well, let's cut the programs first, and then we won't need the revenue, right? And then we can reduce taxes at that point. But the fact is that if we simply match the proposed additional decrease in taxes by a decrease in expenditure, we will still be left with the $1 trillion of deficit that we're currently experiencing.
But, you know,
annual deficit.
So clean energy program, $700 billion. Cut unauthorized programs, $516 billion. What are unauthorized programs?
Well, they aren't unauthorized programs. What they are is programs whose authorization has expired. But the practice in Washington for a long time has been to reinitiate or prolong the program by just simply including it in the budget. So there are all kinds of actually very important programs who were initiated, whose time period expired, but which are annually renewed in the budget by being included in the budget instead of going back to Congress for an extension of a particular program. They simply extend it by including it in the budget and letting Congress vote on it in the budget. And so this is Ramaswamy's magical words to describe these as unauthorized expenditures, when in fact what they are is expenditures that are annually authorized in the budget.
Cancel student loan forgiveness, Joe Biden's, they said that'll $275 billion. Eliminate the education department, $200 billion. Cut food stamp benefits, you know, $180 billion over those 10 years. Impose Medicaid work requirements, $109 billion. Sandy, and child tax credit. So, Sandy, it's safe to say that if they went to Congress with this, there's no way they're passing that with the Democrats.
Well, that my point is, do it first, and then you can come back and talk about tax reductions. That's what the American public ought to stand up and say. Look, Washington, just do this responsibly. Do it the way a family would do it, and take care of the expense side before you decide to affect the revenue side. And they don't do that because it won't happen that way, and it won't happen afterwards either. But but the Republicans are simply voraciously, they have a voracious appetite for tax reductions. They don't have a voracious appetite for the hard work of managing the country and managing the budget.
And then the worst out of all of those, you know, things that they're projecting, they want to cut the IRS funding, the entity that will bring in additional tax resources.
Like I said, tax reductions are all about people who make lots of money wanting to pay less in taxes instead of rejoicing at the fact that they live in a country that has allowed them to earn and has helped them, facilitated for them this capacity to learn all this money. They want to make sure they don't pay it. And then they also want to make sure that they don't get hounded too much to pay the stuff they owe by the IRS. So they want to reduce the funding for the IRS, which incidentally is all about audits. It's all about the IRS's capacity to carry out audits. And who does the IRS audit? They audit people who earn quite a bit of money.
You know, Sandy, in the face of all of those things, the American people, really, these are things that seem to be out of our control. And that's the horrific part of it, because it impacts and affects us and will continue to impact and affect our children and our children's children.
The fact that Washington is outside of our control is something that the American public needs to wake up and do something about. And I guess what we really need is a charismatic leader, someone like Bernie Sanders, who started the process, who needs to take on all of this kind of the influence of lobbyists and the influence of special interests. But, you know, right now, special interests are holding sway, and they're doing it publicly, openly, and notoriously in the incoming administration.
All right, 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Weir, and speaking to Bernie Sanders, you know, he's doing it again, Sandy. He's talking about the fact that, you know, $900 billion for the military industrial complex. 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. You could text us that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And amongst all the other talents and things that Sandy has, he's an economist. And so, Sandy, we're just average citizens, man. We don't see the thing from the economist's view. We see either there's too much money, there's money going here, money going there, and we just can't figure out why we can't balance it out. You know, like we have to do as Americans ourselves. We have to live within our means. We expect our government to do the same.
Well, there are very big forces at work who would prefer that the American public and that the federal government not necessarily worry so much about deficits. And one of those powerful influences is the military-industrial establishment, who, you know, consume the largest portion of the budget, which is discretionary, which Congress really can play with from year to year. And they don't want us to be exercising a great deal of fiscal discipline, because if we rolled up our sleeves and really decided where we should spend money and where money should be expended, which will help the average American the most, we would put a careful microscope on the defense expenditures, which are approaching $900 billion a year. And we'd start paring away there. And everyone understands that there is lots of waste in there. I mean, Ramaswamy and Musk are talking about looking at waste in government. Well, there's no question that if you really rolled up your sleeves and examined how the Defense Department expends all that money, there's lots of waste there. And there's lots of money that's kind of gambled away. We built those naval ships that lasted, yeah, 10 years in the right. fleet. We spent, yeah, we spent billions of dollars on them, and they got mothballed almost before they got launched. And no one did much about that. We had the B-2 bomber. We've had these projects that have run amok and have cost many billions of dollars. And so, you know, there are influences out there. Everyone who wants money from the government is pretty happy that the government doesn't worry too much about deficits, because the more they worried about having a balanced budget, the more careful they would be with a whole variety of programs. And the more careful we would probably be about having programs which cater to the needs of the average citizen rather than all of these other special interests. So plenty of special interests out there are happy that the federal government doesn't exercise fiscal discipline, because fiscal discipline might shut off the spigot for them.
All right, let's go to Jim from Brookfield. Good morning to you, Jim. You say what, sir?
Good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. Happy Friday. I just wanted to circle back about the comments you made about the cuts for the IRS. It's a well-known Republican ploy. They want to cut funding for the IRS. So the IRS is underfunded, does not have the amount of proper agents personnel to audit those billionaires like Elon Musk and all the way down the line. It takes 30 or 40 people to audit a billionaire's tax returns. It takes one to audit someone like us. But you get the messaging out there when the Biden administration proposed additional IRS agents. You had people like Senator Charles Grassley from Iowa, the 90-year-old senator, saying, hey, they're going to come after you. These armed IRS agents going to be outside your door, you, Joe, you know, working class, to try to collect an additional $34 from you. But it was just this huge smokescreen, because in reality, they were covering for the Elon Musk not to have the 30 or so people to audit a billionaire's taxes. I mean, there's a lot of paperwork there for a billionaire. For you and I and Sandy, you know, one person can do it. So it's a bait and switch. It's again, the messaging. The Republicans are very, very good at controlling that message.
Sandy? Hey, Jim, thank you very much for the call.
Evidence of the duration of the audit of a wealthy person. Donald Trump is still apparently under audit and has been for 9 or 10 years by the IRS, relating to a huge deduction he took for a loss carry forward from the bankruptcies of his casinos. And so there you go. There's evidence right there of why it is that the wealthy don't like the IRS being well-funded, because it puts them in a position of being able to pursue the wealthy it's the wealthy who carry out all kinds of Machiavellian strategies to avoid the payments of taxes.
All right, CJ, you're up.
Happy New Year, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I can dispute a lot of things that Sandy speaks of historically and presently. Right now, we're running a $2.5 trillion debt. We're paying almost $1 trillion in interest.
Well, I think that's what I said, CJ. So thanks for the verification.
Well, you know, historically, the last time we had a surplus was during Newt Gingrich and...
The last time we had a surplus was during William Clinton's period. Yes.
Yeah. We were running a surplus. And that was due to the fact that he was forced to do something due to the fact of Monica Lewinsky. But here's the thing.
Oh, my goodness.
The way you talked about tariffs, the threat of tariffs is because... the future president, he's not the current president, is promising that if they don't do something in Mexico and Canada about illegal immigration.
Well, we'll talk about this on the return, CJ, but my point about tariffs is if they're negotiating items, then we aren't going to get $2.7 trillion of revenue out of them. That was my point.
855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you. We're going to talk about a whole... plethora of things. Biden blocks U.S. steel sale to Japan and others. 855-752-4842. It's Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.